Broward County Planning Commission. Sarah, if you would be so kind, call the roll.
Yeah, wait just one.
Oh, sorry.
There's something on here.
Okay.
Troy Burchard.
Here.
Steve Wernke.
Yes.
John Merrill.
Here.
Brian Kelly.
Here.
Bill Norris.
Here.
Andrew Benjamin.
Here.
Peter Flint. Greg Yeager.
Here.
Roberta Marshall.
Here.
Jeff Pettis.
Present.
Carl Kohler.
Here.
Thank you. We have a quorum. we have two new commissioners, Brian Kelly. Brian, could you give us four sentences about yourself for the balance of a commissioner?
I wasn't born yesterday.
Okay, that's a start.
I've been on the City Planning Commission, the school board, and was involved in school board stuff for 20 years, and it's time to move on.
Very good. Thank you, and welcome. And Greg Yeager?
Yeager. Yes. Been in the Valley for about 14 years. Been doing a lot of different service projects and different things like that for my volunteer committees, and felt like this was something up my alley, so giving that a try. Worked for the Sheriff's Office, so kind of go around and see a lot of the areas around Broward County and think that I could be a valuable asset for the team.
Very good. Thank you. And again, welcome and thanks to both of you. Before we get started, a bit of housekeeping. Number one, we'd appreciate it if all cell phones are either off or silenced. Number two, there should be a sign-up sheet floating about.
There's not.
Okay.
There will be a sign-up sheet floating about shortly. And I'd ask that everyone that's in the audience please sign in. And then the third item, these proceedings are available to the public by telephone. They can call in and listen to them. However, the only way that really works effectively is that we all use the microphone. So from an audience standpoint, those of you that will be addressing the Planning Commission, I'd appreciate it if you use the lectern. Thank you. First order of business, public comment. Anyone wishing to address the commissioners on any item that is not on the agenda this evening, now is the time to do so. Seeing none, I'll close that portion of the meeting. Approval of minutes from December 20th, 2018. Any corrections, clarifications?
I have a correction, sir.
Good.
Sir. Top of page 3, at the bottom of the first paragraph, a daycare center which provides for more than 12 children, I think we should strike the word car.
Ah, gotcha. Any others? I have one, and maybe I'm just misreading this, but actually, third paragraph on page 2 starts off, Ms. Halloran said that the teacher-to-student ratios would exceed those mandated by state. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Teachers to students. Not student to teacher.
I want to put a nod in there. I have no idea if I'm reading it.
Students to teachers to students in the sentence?
Teacher-to-student ratios.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it, depending on how you... Yeah, okay. Any other corrections, comments, clarifications?
I move we approve the minutes as amended.
Perfect. We have a motion. Second?
Second.
All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by... What's the matter?
No.
Oh. Please indicate saying yes.
Yes.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Minutes of January 3rd, 2019. John.
It's a small thing, but the vote for the minutes of December 6th, and had reported it as 7-0 cannot be because there were only five commissioners present.
Gotcha. I was going to say Chicago. But
Chicago.
And you ran in Chicago. That's why I got it.
Scott, you got one, too, at the bottom of page two. Commissioner Marshall asked, in consistency between the plat and the survey and the noted the recommendation of GIS that the entire subdivision should be replatted at the beginning there's and the plat and the survey and the noted the. I think the should be changed to she. Commissioner Marshall.
Or just eliminate the.
The. And noted the recommendation of GIS.
Just eliminate the.
There we go.
Any other corrections?
Mr. Chairman, second paragraph on page five. First sentence says that Chairman Brookshire vacating the right-of-way would create a precedent that this is a legitimate solution according to the county. And that's not what my belief was. I would like that context to say that he wondered if this is a legitimate solution according to the county.
Okay.
You get that, Sarah?
Yep.
So after the word precedent, you can delete that. He wondered if this is a legitimate solution according to the county.
Got it. And wondered.
Yep.
Sarah, you got that noted?
Yep.
Good. Any other corrections, clarifications? Hearing none.
We approved this minute, says. Correct.
Thank you, Ryan. Is there a second?
Second.
Third.
Second is Greg.
They're all
Yeager. All those in favor, please signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda. Activity PL-19-101. Conceptual PUD and sketch subdivision. Petitioner's Micro Living, LLC. Does the petitioner wish to address? Now would be the time. Yes, you got it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Everyone, hear me okay? Thank you for getting me on the agenda and having it here. Alan, done a great job. Commissioners, thank you for being here and the public that's interested in this. Thank you guys for being here as well. My name is Michael Pacino, and I'm actually an interior designer here in Steamboat. I've been here for 23 years, and the past probably 2 years kind of started to get the interest in tiny houses, and it kind of came about. And so what you're seeing today is kind of the fruition of a lot of research, a lot of due diligence of where this tiny house movement has come and gone and where we are today. And so what I was hoping to do is cover today is a little bit, so we're all on kind of the same page. What is tiny house living, issues that come up with tiny houses, changes in regulations across the country, kind of tell you where the big picture is where we are. And then I really wanted to land on the Routt County Master Plan and then our project details as we go through here. And so, first off, a tiny house. A tiny house is really started that came out. The IRC, it's something that's 400 square feet or less, not including the lofts. So as you see here pictured, it's just a little residence, and you'll see some other pictures. I think it's more prominently known, these on wheels. So you're seeing HGTV has these great shows that have this allure of living in these cute little homes that you can travel around the country in. So they're 400 square feet, excluding lofts, wheels or foundations is what they've changed to. And really, I think what's happened is they're attractive. People look at these things, and the do-it-yourselfers, the people that are building these right now are building these attractive-looking residences that are kind of quaint. And so I think that's been the allure of how this goes. Obviously, the low cost of ownership. The issues with a tiny home. If I can kind of give you a little bit about where me and my kids were watching the show, HGTV, and they're always interested, and they see a home like what you're seeing here, and it's this really cool-looking camper, for a better term, what it is. And the whole thing is, I was watching these television shows, is I always noticed they kind of breeze through the toilet, you know? They showed someone sitting in a little tub or something like that. And I always wondered, where does the poop go? You know, where's the sewer? What's going on with that? And they never really addressed it in this whole thing. And this whole tiny house movement has been drawn into that allure, but no one really knows kind of the sustainability. And I don't know about you, but I can't live with a composting toilet because after about a year, I think it would smell really bad, but that's just me. The other thing is allowable locations. So now you've got a lot of these people that are doing these homes on wheels, and municipalities across the country are trying to find ways to allow people to live them. They own these homes, they built them themselves, or they've had someone build them, and they're like, where can we park these homes? And a lot of people can attest to how difficult it is when you're on wheels to find a permanent place for your tiny house. And inherently, that's kind of the industry is kind of being stagnated right about there. And we're trying to see what happens. I'm currently on the board of the American Tiny House Association. It's a nationwide group. And I've been on for about a year and a half. And part of the interest was I just wanted to learn more about it. You know, what's going on legislatively? What's going on with municipalities? How is this thing working? And it was a resource. It had some things that were happening in Massachusetts and things that are happening in Florida. It kind of got me into this, okay, what's going on? So I've been part of that, kind of actively pursuing the tiny house movement from a municipality zoning regulation standpoint. I think that's when the problem is not everyone else is. They're like, we own the land, we should be able to put what we want on it. And that's not exactly how this works. Allowable locations, temporary, and the regulations. Right now, you can build a secondary unit in most areas called ADUs under 650 square feet. But you can't upsell them. It's part of your primary residence. And what I'm trying to build into this whole thing is connected to sewer, water, and electric. So as this tiny house movement wants to grow, we need the help here of planning and building departments and get people involved. And how do we make this a viable option for our community? And it's how do we make attainable housing for our community? And that's kind of where we went through. So across the country, what happened back in 2018, here in Brown County, I was extremely impressed. I talked to Ted, and I said, what are you guys doing about tiny houses in a building department standpoint? He's like, Mike, in January, we already adopted the IRC 2018 as an Appendix Q. What's Appendix Q? Well, I knew what it was, but Ted did. But what you're seeing is it's lower interior heights for these trailers, these tiny homes. And staircases, instead of 36 inches wide, when these homes are only 8'6", you know, these tiny homes can have 18-inch wide staircases. So it's a new set of rules, and that was really the first domino to fall. It really, truly was. In my, across the country, the IRC gave building departments and municipalities a set of rules that now we can, like, inspect these and make them legal. Okay? Tiny house zonings. Haynesville, Kansas, one of the first ones in the country that actually wrote a TH zone district. They have their own zoning now. They had that adopted through the Planning Commission and the City Council, and they have it on the books. And so that happened in July of this past year. We're also seeing state legislation. This year alone, of these Senate bills and these House bills in Washington State, but a lot of these are trying to get them on wheels, to okay ADUs on wheels, and try to do this on wheels. So we see this movement in the legislation side instead of people living illegally for long periods of time. And so they're trying to put some regulations that allow people to live. El Paso County here in Colorado amended their land development code so that they can have RV parks, like campground, but you can do it long term. They can live there for a year, 2 years. They're not limited to 30 days. So the El Paso County's already jumped into this. And California has an ordinance right now that allows movable tiny homes as ADUs. Now their climate's different. They won't have pipes and stuff like that, but we're seeing that as a movement. What happened was that I got into this. DOLA gave a presentation. Some of you may have been there about a year and a half ago. And DOLA came and asked for and was talking about tiny houses and zoning and regulations. I happened to attend it. I was intrigued and got the conversation coming of like, where could you put a tiny home in Route County? Well, the Yampa Valley Sustainability Council had a forum, and at that forum was Chad Phillips and Todd Carr, who's recently the new building department head, and Scott wasn't there. He was supposed to be there. He's on the agenda. Ryan Cox and Darren Fire were also on the panel. And because I'm American Tiny House president, or not president, I'm a board member, I stood up for a Q&A at the end of it. But from that gathering at the Yampa Valley Sustainability Council, they were trying to put together, if someone wants to build in Route County, let's give them a handbook. So the Sustainability Council said, okay, let's help the people and find out what it is. So what you're seeing here is actually a report that Chad put together, Chad Phillips, and it was just, he went to this little breakdown session for those that wanted to help brainstorm how do we help people out. And we were identifying these urban growth areas that Route County will let you build a tiny home. Now, let's say you can or cannot. It's just these are the areas that you're supposed to. You know, you can't have an acre out in the county and say, can I build tiny houses? Because the answer is no. We have defined growth areas in our community that you guys have, that's Route County Master Plan has, that says these are where we're going to grow, we're going to grow here. And so as we went through some of these, you know, obviously it's Oak Creek, Hayden, Hunts Peak, Steamboat, Yampa, Pittsburgh, Miller, the areas we already have. And there was a couple others. There's a 15-acre parcel out there just off of County Road 33, but it needs a lot, and it's a big parcel. But there's a lot of limitations. And so what I found talking to Aaron Light at the Department of Water Resources, I had someone come to me, so a realtor came up and says, hey, I got some land up in Hunts Peak. I'm like, yeah, you could build like 20 of these. I'm like, great, that's fine. You know, but when you talk to Aaron Light and others, like, yeah, you don't have any water. Oh, yeah, that's right, water. So we could build it, but we don't have any water. So as you start looking at all these parameters of what's holding up a tiny house project, and for that matter, any kind of project, it really comes down to these limitations. Stagecoach, for example, has the Stagecoach Property Owners Association, and SPOA says basically you got to have a house that's 1,000 square feet. So, well, that's not really a tiny house now, is it? So, of course, that whole property subdivision kind of is like, okay, we'll have to deal with that monster later. Steamboat Lake has the same kind of thing. They think they have an 800 square feet minimum. And so as we started to look through these, what we found, what I found, was I found Milner. And Milner was a area that, man, it crossed the box. It had a sewer treatment plant. Wow. Now I know where the poop goes. It's not going to go in a composting toilet. I'm not going to have to pump it out. It also has wells. And I was talking to Brian Robig on that. I'm like, Brian, is there too many wells out here? He goes, no. They can still get you more wells there. I'm like, okay, checkbox number two. We got electric, and if we need heat, we have propane, but I found out recently we have Atmos Gas is right in the back alley, and I'm like, sweet. So this is one of those areas that in our county has all the criteria to allow a development, okay? And that's just developed in general. So what I try to do is we go through, and you've read through this hopefully, and some of you guys may not have, but it's right off of the 40, and it's just across kind of catty corner from Daddy-O's. So as you're seeing, you know, obviously here's the commercial place, there's a commercial lot here, and it's that dilapidated property. And so I'm going to go to there real quick. So you see this, you drive by it all the time. You wonder if you could stop by there and get a burger. You can't right now, but hopefully one day you will. Well, across the street is this building here. And this building is the, I found out today, I think it's been used as a repair shop. It was a little store for a while. No water, you know, just kind of been there collecting dust for many years. And so this project and this parcel kind of fit the bill for building a tiny house. And so we go through the project, and I'm looking, these are all part of their packet so that they have reference to it. But it's a flat land, needs a little bit of demolition to make it usable. But really what we wanted to do, what I wanted to do is create a tiny home project. It's zoned for two parcels. Two single-family residences. There's four lots, and you can build two single-family residences. And so what we've tried to do is, if you can imagine, this would be one residence, and that would be another in the neighborhood, just currently what's there now. And what we're doing is we're taking that, and we're providing housing for six single-family dwellings connected to water, sewer, electric. More importantly, it's connected to ground. It was very important to me to have something to show an example that connects to the ground. Why? Because now we can invoke the, you know, it's a foundation. We've got banks that will loan on this. So people in our community can now afford it because they can buy their own tiny home. The banks would loan against it. You know, you've got your sewer, your water, your electric, you're right here in the middle. So, I mean, it kind of is like, this works for me. It's not this big monster development. We're not doing a subdivision like Sunlight. We're just taking this and trying to see how it works, you guys. We're all being pioneers here, everybody here. And so let me just kind of walk through this project. You guys have seen it. Some of you may not have. But what you're seeing here... Oh, is obviously there's parking on this side here. So here's Main Street, right? And back here is an alleyway that is actually not built right now. If you go back just a couple pictures, this is the alleyway. And so in this picture here, you see that it kind of stops. But we would have to continue that alleyway and add parking on the other side. And that's where we get this additional parking back here in the alley, in the front. And then we just have these little parcels with a big open space. Part of the reason why we're doing a conceptual PUD, as you know, is that it's not zoned for anything. I mean, it's zoned for single-family, you know, homes. And anybody that I've talked to across the country is fighting this thing of, like, it's not zoned. I'm getting no's. And, in fact, I was at that symposium at the Sustainability Council, and I remember talking to someone. They said, oh, you got to do a PUD or something. It's expensive. I'm like, it's the set of rules you have to go by. You see, what I'm not here to do is ask you guys to change the zoning. I'm not asking you guys to change our code. What I'm asking for is this conceptual PUD. This is why we have this. It doesn't fit into this box. It doesn't fit into this box. We have a box called PUD, and there's nothing in it. Like, what do you want to do with it? Like, you know what? That's what I want to get in. I want to see what we can come up with. And that's what this developed. But it had some requirements. You know, 25% open space. You know, we had issues being single family, multifamily. And so working with planning staff, we kind of came up with this. And the earlier, remember about about a year ago, we had the application that kind of came through. And we had to pull it because the landowner kind of got sideways because we were thinking it was an approvals. And we now own the land with Brian, and we're going to... we're moving, we'd like to move forward with this. And so with that, let's go to the next one. So here's what we're talking about, is being able to sell the lots, because staff was suggesting, and I totally blew my mind, by the way, is to subdivide this so people can buy it. You know, I'm not interested in being a landlord, these are nice, they're not slumlords, because I really want to provide this type of attainable housing for our community. Someone who has to choose between living in a shadow-run condo that's 25, 35 years old, or buy something here. Your school teachers, you know, your police department, the young people that we, our workforce, and anybody else, they get to buy the dirt underneath their tiny house. And that was appealing to me more than anything. So what we're talking about doing is taking this and subdividing it into these little lots, okay? And then we have a big common area. Then we go through, and this is kind of just your landscaping, green space and trees, kind of what we're going to create, parking on the side, sidewalk kind of wrapping around the open space. The previous application, if you remember, the only thing that I saw negative on it, really, that kind of started me was road and bridge. We had parking out here. We had all of our additional parking on this spot, but they were like, yeah, that's the right-of-way. We won't let you do that. And we had 12 parking spots, but we had to pull them inside, which we did, and we probably can get one or two more out of there, but right now that's kind of fits in the bill. So here's kind of what they look like. They're just these small, if you can, I can't really zoom in, but that says 20 feet, and that says 10 feet, or 26. 26 and 20, we have two different sizes. And there's the 26, a little bit bigger. What we try to create here is a little extra room down at the bottom, maybe for an office or crib. You know, if you're going to grow into this thing, it'd be kind of nice to do. And, of course, they all have lofts. The lofts aren't calculated in the square footage, but they'll all have a second loft. Now, the big thing that I'm trying to do here is I build it on a foundation that is 60 inches deep. Stem walls 48. Let's go 60. And the reason being is now I got, if I put a slab underneath there, I could put my water tank, water heater, electric, kayak, bike, Christmas stuff. We now have storage underneath this because, I'm sorry, we all have stuff to store. So here in this tiny house, we have storage on the property. Here's what the allure of this and what we're trying to do with this conceptual PUD is you get to own the land, tall foundation walls for storage, full-size kitchen, full-size bathroom. This isn't, have you ever gone camping for a long period of time and that sink's about this big and you're trying to wash your face with it, just hard to do? We're talking full-size. This is not small. And we have the space to do it. Lots of open space, light. And right now we have about one parking space plus a little extra for guests. That's what we're trying to build. And we really identified in Milner as the first place to start because it has water, it has sewer, it has electric. And here in Round County, we're kind of pioneering this whole process. And you guys are part of that process. This Planning Commission, the Board of Commissioners, approving this conceptual PUD would be paramount on how this movement is going to grow into the next few years and give housing to our community. It's kind of what my motivation is that I got a great business. I'm still doing interior design. This is just an added opportunity that I saw that we need to do. Someone needs to do this. And so I just thank you for your time. Sorry for the long dialogue, but I just kind of want to make sure we're on the same page. And I'll be available for any questions, obviously, as we go through this deliberation.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. And you will be getting questions, don't worry.
I'll keep my notes up.
Alan?
So...
Do you have comments?
I do have a few things to add. I'm going to start off with some process-related comments and then move into the rest of my comments. So this is a review for sketch subdivision and conceptual PUD. This is the first step in a multi-step process. And your decision tonight will be a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners who will make the final decision on this particular application. So a little bit about the PUD process. And the PUD stands for Planned Unit Development, is intended to allow flexibility in a development that strict compliance with the zoning and subdivision regulations would not allow. The process can accommodate imaginative ideas while maintaining the goals and the policies of the Rapp County Master Plan. And a key component of the PUD is that an application or development is not required to comply with the standards in the zoning and subdivision regulations. However, staff and planning commission, the board of county commissioners need something to base their decision on. So those standards have been included in your staff report just so that you can use them as a basis for comparison. So at this stage of the review, the conceptual PUD sketch subdivision, you are reviewing the basic design of the subdivision and to determine compliance with the master plan. Specific details will be worked out at the next step of this process, and because of that, Planning Commission should give feedback to the applicant on those things that need to be addressed during the next step in the process. So Michael did a good job of going over what the proposal is. So we're looking at six lots with tiny homes ranging from 200 to 260 square foot footprint, not habitable space, but a footprint with a 25 foot height restriction. Access will be from Main Street and the undeveloped alley. Sewer services are provided by the county. Water would be provided by a system that the developer would have to install. He did point out that 8 parking spaces are shown. This equates to 1.33 parking spaces per lot. And for comparison, the standard in the zoning regulations is 2 parking spaces per dwelling unit. The PUD standard requires 25% open space. What has been shown is a little less than 3,000 square feet, which equates to 23.3% of the lot. So some things are going to have to get worked out on to come into compliance with that. So that one is part of the PUD standard, so that is one that must be complied with. There's no flexibility in that. Referral agency comments, CPW stated they wanted wildlife resistant trash containers. Method of storing trash was not presented, but again, that's something that can be addressed at the next stage. Steamboat Springs Fire Protection District said that fire hydrants will not be required and that their mobile supply apparatus can be used to provide water for emergency services. CDOT stated that they do not want to issue another access permit for the alley onto Highway 40 just for traffic control concerns. And then Road and Bridge brought up several issues that they said they would like addressed, mainly stormwater runoff created by the development, specific numbers on anticipated traffic amounts, specifics on development of the alley, and utility easement locations and sizes. So some of the issues for discussion that were brought up in the staff report include, is the density being proposed in compliance with the master plan and compatible with the characteristics of the area? What is the Planning Commission's opinion on the number of parking spaces proposed? Are the proposed setbacks and spacing between the structures adequate to provide access, fire protection, ventilation, light, air, utility installation, and snow storage? And are the utility easements sufficient width to make maintenance practical and utilities easily accessible? And then just some, if this application is approved, some items that need to be addressed at the next step of this process would be that 25% open space, fee in lieu for the dedication of parks and school sites, utilities, and method for storing trash. And so that's all I've got for now. Welcome questions. As they come.
Questions for either staff or the petitioner by the commissioners at this point. John.
Alan, you said the fire department isn't going to require hydrants. Did they comment on the space
proposed between buildings as far as their concerns?
They did not. However, the building department did comment on that because according to the building code, if you are 5 feet or less from the property line, then there are special methods for construction that have to be employed to prevent fires from spreading from one structure to the other. And that type of construction significantly increases the cost. So the building department's suggestion was make it at least 5 feet from the property line. Whether it's 5 feet, half an inch, or 6 feet, they suggested having more than 5 feet.
Other questions?
Did fire say anything for EMS or anything to access? With just, it seems, the parking areas with the parking stalls, if they're all being utilized at that point, is there any way for a stretcher or anything else to be able to access through there?
They did not comment on that, no.
Mr. Chair. Sorry, Jeff. Yes.
I do have some questions of the applicant.
Sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chair.
Jeffrey.
Have you had a chance to review the staff packet?
I did. I have it here.
Excuse me. And you've also had a chance to review the comments that Alan just talked about?
I have.
Could you speak to those?
I can. The one that, the one that catches me off guard more so than anything was the fee in lieu. Because under the code, section 352 and 351 of the zoning, it really identifies more of the public benefit. And it's really, when you're doing a PUD, it's really identified to have fire houses, schools, parks, you know, and when you don't have this donated land or something to give to the community, then you can give a percentage to a fee in lieu. And, you know, it's of all the conditions, it's the only one that I really have a problem with because I'm trying to keep the cost down on these so they're affordable and attainable. But it's just, I can see that when you're building a project like Sunlight or, you know, one of the bigger developments, when you're doing a PUD, there's a lot bigger chunk to pull from. In this case, there really isn't a public benefit on that one, so this fee in lieu kind of under section 3.5.1 and 3.5.2 really identifies giving that public benefit. And so for me, that was the first one. I'm like, you know, that hopefully I could strike that. I would ask for that to be striked, and hopefully the Board of Commissioners will do that. It's something to talk about, but I think the fee in lieu and doing the numbers on that, it's about $2,400. So it's not an exorbitant amount of money, but in the principle of this, it has that kind of benefit that I don't know where the money's going to be good for. That's not what I'm worried about. But that was the first thing. I think in the other, let me get there, hold on. I think the density was one that came up in an issue, an item for discussion. And it would definitely be something that has the potential to have a high debt. If you had two people per unit, okay, at a minimum, you're looking at 12. But what we're talking about is a parcel of land where you could put two single-family homes. So a single-family home, let's just assume, is mom and dad with two kids. There's four. So already we have eight. So where the increase of going a little bit more, we don't know if six single people are going to live here. So the density is going to be lower. You know, I don't see that these are not that big of spaces. You don't see five people living in them. So the density is not going to be that great. So from the density standpoint, I'm okay with this density in this location because the benefit that we have showing the community what tiny houses can do, giving an example to our community of what a tiny house community can do, and really setting that first example of, okay, let's kind of massage this and start from here. If I had a single family home, I know someone next door to me bought the house, their two people moved in, and they have six kids. So now all of a sudden we have eight people that moved in just in the single family home. So if you had eight and one and eight and nine, you had 16 people in the same density as far as people. Okay. The issue comes up with, I think, in the third item or fourth item was the parking. And the parking is definitely in our an area that if everyone owns a car and you live in Milner and you and your other half has to get to and from work, then we're just going to assume everyone needs two parking spots. And that's a big assumption to make, because I don't think that's fair, especially when less than 75 feet away from this property line is a bus stop. See, one of the reasons why I love this parcel to try is it's got public transportation. I mean, you've got to address the fact that we now have a part of our county that you can get the bus to. Oak Creek doesn't have public transportation to Steamboat, but we will. Okay, so then you have one parking spot per plus an extra, and I think that allows us some flexibility to see how that works. And that's kind of where the parking comes in. The easements and the setbacks. So part of this 23.3% open space is what we currently have, was calculated based upon where we gave the hash marks on that page 1.1.2, I think it is.
Alan, could you pull up that site plan?
Oh, here, I'll do it.
It's A11 and A12.
So here's the, and as you see, we just kind of estimated that, the square footage of that, but we're not calculating in any more sidewalks, or if we, you know, took some of this away. I mean, 200 feet, we can gain 200 feet to fit within the 25%. That's not a problem. So the issue of the 25% open space, again, on a conceptual PUD, we were just kind of giving us all the concept of it, but knowing that that's a parameter and we were 1.7% away, this can be modified without a problem. The setbacks that we were talking about is this down here. There's an easement that we have, the water that you're seeing. Well, that water is actually going to change, because what water doesn't want us to do is put two wells in. We were originally going to do one well here, one well up here, you'll see. But after talking to Aaron Light and that, we're going to just do one well up here, and then they want us to put a storage tank underneath this. So they want a cistern that pumps all the water into here, and that provides water to each one of the properties. So from a water standpoint, we're going to just do one well. And then that really opens up where we can go ahead and, instead of making this the easement for electricity, you know, we have it right here. So this easement that's only 5 feet that we have in one of those utility easements, is it really sufficient? 5 foot's not that wide if you have to bring a machine in to do any digging. So I was talking to Brian Adams, my architect here, and we were saying, you know, we can move this so it's back somewhere, you know, down the centers. We were just trying to keep the water and the sewer pipes further away from each other, then closer together, and that's kind of where we have the easements on the perimeter of the lot as opposed to down the center. But you see sewers here, and water was back here. And that's just a matter of playing a game of Tetris and trying to figure out where's the best place for it. I think that handles those three out of four items. Do you have something else?
Do you mind if I follow up with?
Please.
So I'm going to go through some of your responses here. In terms of the PAU vis-a-vis the open space, do you have plans to create an HOA?
Absolutely.
Okay. And would you somehow be willing to grant the town of Milner access to this area to utilize as a public space park? It appears that you want it to be a park area anyway. Green space?
Probably not.
It's going to be all paved?
No, that's going to be a green space, but it's not going to be public to the rest of the town of Milner.
Okay. Related to parking, it sounds like you do have the space to create additional spots if needed. I understand it affects your bottom line.
No. Parking is great. We could add more. It affects our snow storage requirement. So there's a balancing act there. But we can massage that. Again, we had a bunch of parking out here in the right-of-way, and it was a deep drive from here to here. But we wanted to follow the rules of the book, and the book says put them on the property. So we kind of went down a little bit and kind of made it work.
And it sounds like to resolve the easement issue, you could move the 4, 5, 6 buildings to the east. Is that right?
Yeah.
And that would create insufficient access.
Exactly. I think what we're seeing is that some of these buildings, especially when we go to the final PUD, a lot of these little fine-tooth comb ideas of just inching things up and moving, it's not going to change the concept. So if we move these up, you know, a couple of feet and over a couple of feet, and it kind of makes the decks, like these are all porches right here, here, and here, and then up here. You know, if those decks have to be a little bit smaller so that we have more easement, then they can make it a garden for most of the time until someone has to come rip it up because we need some utility easement. But they can use it as a garden all day long, you know. But I think that will kind of hammer some of those things out.
Of course, moving would affect the percentage of the open space.
Well, I wouldn't change. I mean, right now I could lessen the deck, move the building, get more space without changing any of this. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's all I have for now.
Other questions? Jim? Brian, sorry.
The question on the alley, I noticed in the pamphlet that the alley to provide for more than three homes is supposed to be 22 feet wide. So it's a twofold question. How much alley do you have to rebuild? The alley is only 20 feet wide, so what are you doing to address that issue of, you know, the insufficient width according to county road specs?
I don't know exactly what we're going to do. I know that with as far as the extra 3 feet, what we would do, because it's hard to get 3 feet from someone else, because the alley width is already defined in this location as it is, so we can only go from what we have. Now, what we are tasked to do is, in fact, I don't know if you guys have that. I don't think you do. But it was part of our process of buying the property is there's actually a residential road maintenance agreement that was put together for that alleyway that is defined lots A, B, and C, and D. We're in charge of maintenance of that. So that's not on the county. And that's based upon this that's already been recorded. You know, it's one of those things you get when you do the title search and you're like, oh, snap. All right, well, that's what we have as part of the rules. You know, it is part of the rules. And so we know that we're going to be able to build this according to the standards that Road and Bridge gives us as far as the road base and the cover and stuff like that. I don't know if they gave us that final standard.
I was going to follow up with some comments.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. And then so that's kind of where that is. But we want to go back far enough so we can push the snow, obviously, past the parking spots, and then we have our spots. And that's why you see in the drawing how it's done that way. But go ahead, Alan, if you could. There was some issues on that alley.
Yeah, so the platted width of that alley is 20 feet. And standards for a common road, which serves more than three lots, is 22 feet plus shoulders. But this is, since it's an alley, it's not a main traveling thoroughfare. So I talked to Road and Bridge about that, and they said, well, it does serve more than three lots, but it's an alley. So what does the fire department say? Because the county doesn't have alley standards. The fire department responded, we don't have alley standards either, but a 16-foot wide travel surface would be adequate. And they also said that they asked what the depth of the lot would be, which is 125 feet. They said that they carry enough hose that can stretch 150 plus feet. So if they needed to get in there to fight a fire, they could park on Main Street and stretch their hoses to the rear of the lot and still have enough hose to be able to fight a fire.
So thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
Alan, if I'm assuming that that alley could be used today to access Highway 40?
No.
It would need an access permit from CDOT. Yeah.
So as it exists, it's not an open public right-of-way to 40.
And from what CDOT's report was, they aren't going to give us one to finish that lot. So that parcel right there, as though it drives like it should go at 40's right at the end, they have no intention of letting us connect it.
No, I don't think it should.
You know.
The other question I had real quick was, why are we at 25 feet in height?
That was, I won't say arbitrary, but we're trying to think that if we, the thing about tiny houses is that you do have a minimum height of these structures, especially in the lots. And if you see some of these lots can be small, and we drew them kind of small in this because we're going off of the tiny homes on wheels. So if you're going to take a tiny home and you're going to travel it down the road, it can only be so tall. And that's where these height requirements kind of came in. And so what we're thinking is like, well, hey, if we're going to be on a foundation, we're not limited to just 6'4" in the kitchen. We could go 7-8 feet, and the loft could be 6-8 feet. So that puts me at, you know, 24 or 16 feet plus a slight lobe. So at the, you know, 25 feet height, at top would be where the max could be. And that's where that 25 foot came from. It was just as an argument that if we redesign or design these things, and in the final PUD, we'll have the actual floor plans and exactly what the height are. So if it turns out to be 16.5, then it's 16.5. I just don't want to go through this conceptual process not knowing what that end product is. And a lot of that is the height. What you see with these is a lot of the shed roofs, instead of going with pitch roofs, is because we can do like a 212, keep the snow on them, and not have to worry about higher pitches and higher structures, still keeping them down. So it's a balancing act between that.
If I'm kind of reading between the lines, you're hoping to be able to provide a second floor.
They all have lofts. All of them.
How tall is the ceiling in the loft?
It varies. I mean, it could be whatever. Most of the time when we see these down there, we could ask how big some of the tiny home livers here that have homes that live in them. But normally they're 5-6 feet tall inside. We're hoping to get them so that I could stand. I'm 5'8". I'd like to be able to stand in my loft. And because we're not traveling down the road, there's two things that we did differently. One is, when you get a trailer, they're 8'6". So most tiny homes that you've seen are 8'6" wide. We are doing ours 10 feet because I don't plan on traveling these things down the road. We're going to build these on site. So with that requirement, then we go out the same way.
So, Alan, what's a typical two-story home, and how tall would a typical two-story house in Milner be? Height.
I'm not sure. I would probably say around 25 feet.
So it'd be relatively consistent.
I think so. So, Michael, does that 25 foot include the 60-inch crawl space as well?
No, I'm just going from grade, finished grade.
So the crawl space, the 60-inch crawl space is going to be below grade?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole idea was a lot of these things, they were just going to put them on pads. You know, when you think of tiny houses, we just want to put a concrete pad, put my house on it, and I live in it. Well, then I'm starting to think, well, in Colorado, you can't do that. You've got to have a foundation for your, you know, frost line. So we have to go 48-inch stem walls. Well, let's go 60-inch, make it storage. So now all of a sudden, everyone who has one has a place to put the kayak, the bike, the Christmas. Oh, now I put my water heater, stuff like that.
Do you have a question? One more. Michael, I think I read the regulations. Once we subdivide, once you subdivide into individual saleable parcels, I think the regulations say that each lot is supposed to have vehicular access. So, not that I'm saying I think that's a must. I'm just trying to figure out if I'm on the right page and if you have a basis to say they won't all have vehicular access, but this is why it works and why would it work?
It's a great question. This is a PUD. And with a PUD, we have some availability to scrap everything, start with a new set of rules. So some of those rules that affect a typical subdivision, if you're going to take a subdivision, I'm going to take a lot, I'm going to take this big parcel of land, I want to make sure everyone has an driveway access. When you're doing a PUD in a place like this, it correct me if I'm not wrong, Alan, but that all of a sudden you get a kind of a new set of rules. You get a defined set of rules. And in this one, it was actually brought, we originally had this where you would drive down the center and have your own parking spot next to your tiny house. And actually, we had two parking spots, which someone could make it a garden if they wanted to. Problem is, we needed the 25% open space. So that pushed the parking to the perimeter of the lot. Is that pretty accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Carl.
Yeah, question for you about the setbacks. The proposed PUD setbacks are less than they would be in the existing MDR zoning. Can you just talk a little bit about what drove your decision with respect to the setbacks that you came up with?
Well, we kept the front of that was 15, and we're maintaining that same proposed setback. The rear, being that we have the whole rear is our own alleyway, and we have that parking, so we really wanted to push these two homes right here, close to that, right there. It was more of a way of making sure we can get six on there. Mm-hmm. And so that's where that rear setback is at 5. And then the side setbacks were set for 10. That's what the code says. And we kind of just arbitrarily put it at 8. Again, trying to kind of push the envelope a little bit with this type of residence in light of the open space. But as you can see, the setbacks are based upon where the building is. And we can, you know, make the deck smaller and move the building closer if that becomes an issue. I think it's very easy for us to say, hey, let's move the setbacks to 10 and give us 2 feet. The decks may be a little bit smaller, but we'll still give them decks. We'll still make it work. But that's kind of where we came up with it. The rear setback was really because we know we're not set back here next to another house. You know, you've got this alleyway. It just, you know, we can gain from that extra 10 feet. Instead, if we had to push that 15-foot setback all the way back to here, then that just kind of changes the whole scope of this.
I have some questions about landscaping. I see you have a total of 4 aspen trees, which to me doesn't seem like a lot of landscaping. And so I'm wondering if you're going to do design guidelines for the units and require them to put trees in between the units, or what the thought was on embellishing the landscape plan, and also if you could address the type of fencing that's being proposed, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Roberta. I got to tell you, I'm all about landscaping. My father's a landscape architect in California, and so I grew up with landscaping. I think for the conceptual PUD, we just have a few on here, but the whole project is going to be developed by us. We're not letting someone only put one tree in or not. We're going to have the whole thing part of a nice little park setting. I think the city of Steamboat has what they call a bungalow court on their city code, so we can do this, and it's kind of like little bungalow courts. We want to make it really pleasant. The other thing that came up in the discussions with staff was that this open space really has to be defined its uses, you know, whether it's cornhole or horseshoes or gazebo or open park space. And so I anticipate having more than just the 4 trees. Now, right now on this south parcel here, they have a big fence. And so you'll see that in that picture. There's the fence on this bottom right picture here. That's right on the property line, I think. And there isn't one on the north, which is up on this side. And actually, this building, there's a shed right here, and the property line is in the middle of that build right there. It's like inside the building. So we'll have to talk to Skidge Moon about how to do it. But this is a commercial lot, so I anticipate doing some type of barrier to define that, especially with kids and dogs and things. You know, I'd like to confine this with fencing, similar to what's there, probably something a bit more attractive than a wood picket fence. But I anticipate having this. I mean, for me, this is important that it looks the example of what other communities can say, ah, I get it. So landscaping is going to be pretty big. And again, with my background in that, we'll see how this turns out in the final PUD.
And then one other question. Given that you may need additional parking, it said that there was parking on the street. I was wondering if roads have talked about, is there adequate width on Main Street, for example, to have additional parking?
So that would just be for guest parking. It would not be long-term parking, so it was just anticipated. I mean, because any house in Milner has their dedicated parking spots, but if you have friends over, they're allowed to park on the street. So that was where that comment came from, was mainly for guest parking and not for resident parking.
So we shouldn't assume that there would be two spaces per unit?
I would suggest not.
Okay.
Alan, question. Under the PUD concept, the PUD doesn't dictate the square footage of the structures, does it?
No.
Oh, not that I'm aware of, anyway.
No, the zoning regulations do not have a minimum or maximum square footage for any parcel in the county.
Right, but that's not true because you've got the auxiliary, but that's not the point. But that could take place in terms of covenants and restrictions.
Yes.
And that's my understanding that covenants will be in place.
Okay.
And an HOA in place.
Absolutely.
And two separate animals.
Yeah, and we have to have it. I mean, as much as one of the arguments I get with a lot of people, like, oh, I can't wait to get out of, you know, Walton Creek or Walton Village or Shadow Run, as I'm tired of the HOA.
Right.
We're still going to have an HOA. It just won't be $200 or $300 a month because we have this open space. It's just kind of the nature of this PUD application. The process requires us to not only have, you know, these individual lots, but this big open space. Someone's going to have to plow it. Someone's going to have to pay for that, and it's got to be a collective effort. HOA. It's the only option.
Okay. Bill?
So, Michael, a little question to something you brought up. Almost a brand new building code that we haven't looked at before for tiny houses. Opens up a whole new file, and for every project that comes behind that with this tiny house building or zoning, if we're breaking down and sell each one of these, it doesn't fit the current zoning. And if we had a tiny house zone to set up with a smaller easements on each side of these buildings, we're stretching everything for this project that we haven't done before. And my first concern would be to look at something that Alan brought up, was the maintenance for utilities. He brought up a shed that wasn't on there and a cistern that wasn't on there. And then you said something about bringing smaller tractors in to put upgrades to the water, or if an electric line needed to be redone. So the first thing that hit me was each one of these 5-foot crawl spaces is going to have an individual pump coming from a cistern in the middle of the open space. Am I correct there?
Yes.
And to each individual property owner would be responsible for just the pump?
They're their own individual inside the house, inside the structure. Water won't let us build 6 wells. All right. So I can't put 6 wells on 6 houses. Shared well. And so in the word shared, we have to have a shared tank of water that then pumps into your structure for what you need. And so, again, the maintenance of that has to be done with an HOA. So you're going to have someone maintain the one well and cistern for the whole roof. In addition to that, I think, you know, if we keep the 5-foot easements down there and it's the water line down there, which we're changing on one side anyway, but you can't get a truck down there. Yampa Valley Electric wants to come in and dig out. They need... And so they may have a little tiny one of those ones that runs by a remote control that can dig out, but you know we don't want to do that. You know, we don't want to do that. And so some of these things were brought up during the staff and in the discussion right now, as far as you know, the easements, and I think that we can address those easily by just kind of moving some structures around and stuff like that.
Would the electric line, the main electric line, come to the pump house then? Have maybe 6 meters there, or
I will talk to Yampa Valley Electric before the next application. And right now, that's what these are up here. If I'm not mistaken, those are the electric inputs for this. And then we're looking to well in that same general location. So up there, it's interesting you brought up a good point, Bill. There is not the zoning that's going through, and I think City of Steamboat has a new RN4, which is a 4,000 square foot lot. And I was talking to the city planners, and we can actually put an ADU on 4,000 square feet. And I was like, so it's kind of written in the code already that you can build a 4,000 square foot lot in this RN4 district with an ADU. So imagine having a tiny home with a tiny home. You got two. But it's already in the code. I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's already built in the code as we speak. But what we're finding is that across the country, Rapp County, PUD is the application. The PUD is the process. If you see these coming in front of you, like the next year, you're going to be like, we need to change the zoning. You're going to be the first one raising your hand saying, let's find a new tiny house code because there's just too much of it happening. And I'm willing to invest the time into doing it as a PUD, setting the groundwork for maybe 2 years from now. And the one reason why I'm not coming and asking you guys, change the zoning of this so I can build my tiny houses, it's ridiculous. That's just not the way you do this. You use the rules that are in place, we build it, and if enough of these start happening, then we as a community, we change the zoning.
That's where I was. Alan brought it up that later down the road, we subdivide this unit so that you could sell and not rent. So if we were to subdivide, at that point, where would that fit into the current zoning?
Well, this is a part of the sketch subdivision plan. So what you're seeing here is actually those dashed lines. So here's this one. It has a dotted dash right here. You'll see it says lot 2, lot 3, lot 4, lot 5, all here. Those with this conceptual PUD includes a subdivision to sell these lots right now. So even though we have this open space, we want people to buy that dirt and their tiny home on it. Now, down the road, heck, maybe we get more homes out of it and we subdivide differently. But under the current rules that we have to play with, we can do this. Works. We can subdivide it. We can build it. We can do an HOA, and people own the dirt under their home. And that's the deal. You know, we rent and rent. And how long did you rent in a place? Man, how did it feel when you bought your own place? You know what I mean? You owned it. And that's what we want with our people in our community here. We don't want transients all the time. We want people who live here and be part of this community. That's why when Chad Phillips mentioned to me about, why don't you subdivide? I was like, me? That would be awesome. I didn't know it was an option. So that's why it's added in here. Because we can. I think it's a great way to do it. Let people own the dirt underneath their house. You know? Again, I don't want to be a landlord too long. But...
Just a question on the water. You said the cistern, so you're going to feed the water off the middle instead of the north and south property line.
Yeah, when Aaron Light said that we probably wouldn't get 2 well permits, then we really had to abandon this other one here, which is south. And the reason being is that there's another well just about 25 feet over here, and they have shared that with the people down south. So we're going to, you know, this one's fine. And we can pump that into a storage tank that's underneath here. and everyone will get water out of that.
So essentially your common area is going to be a common easement too.
Exactly.
Between the water, the sewer, the electric, it's all going to be easement.
It could be an easement, and we haven't talked about that, but if we do an easement in the open space for everyone to use, then it's a non-issue. They have to tear up the maintenance as long as we don't build a bunch of trees that they can at least get to where the storage tanks are. Yeah, okay, cool.
Sure. I don't know if this is for Alan or Michael, but is there a threshold where your water supply, because you're serving X number of
single-family residences? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at what point does the state get involved in testing your water supply?
It really depends on the well. So if the well produces X amount, we won't know until we start digging the well. But we'll have a deep enough well that produces enough water or a big enough storage tank.
I'm not worried about supply.
You're talking about quality?
Yeah, no, it didn't went to quality.
So
it's a central system.
And Scott might be able to answer this, but the state has a definition of public drinking water system. And I think it's 20, is it 25 taps?
It's 15 service connections or 25 individuals being served, I believe.
Over a certain amount of time.
Yeah. At least 6 months of the year.
So there are some standards. I haven't looked at them in relation to this project, but I don't know if that is going to meet that criteria.
Okay.
Yeah, we did a seven-house shared spring. We did not have a permit other than the landowner's own spring, so you're six. You'll be underneath it.
Was there enough water? Do you guys ever have a problem?
No, it was a good spring.
Okay. Cross our fingers.
For the time being, I'll suspend the questions, although there'll be ample opportunity. And I'd like to open up to the public for
sure.
So anybody that wishes to comment on the proposed petition, now would be the time to do so.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris Osbeck. I am the homeowner with the fence.
Would you mind pointing to your property on here, please?
I'm the one with the fence with the alley.
It's right here.
Okay.
And this is the question of the project.
Okay. Yeah. So my biggest concern, question to these guys is, where is all the snow going to go? Any comments on where the snow is going to go when you plow that alley?
He'll address that.
Okay.
Independently.
Okay.
I don't want to get dialogue back and forth.
Okay. Another question I have or concern is traffic going through that alley. These are just concerns of mine. But one of my biggest concerns is, you know, where is the snow going to go? Because there is a lot of snow. I do have photos that I took this afternoon. If anybody would like to see the snow there now, there's 12-foot berms behind that fence that are probably 25 to 30 feet long. It's a lot of snow.
So when you say behind the fence, could you be a bit more specific, like north of the fence?
Can you go to the fence picture? Which?
Yeah, give me 1 second.
The alley fence. Thank you.
No, that's not it. Okay.
Sorry. Trying to use the... I think it's... So anyway, this whole thing right here, so pretty much from that post to about, I'd say, 10 to 15 feet past my last post, there is... berms, they're 12 to 15 feet high. And I'm just concerned I've told my neighbor to, you know, to watch putting snow on my fence to so my fence doesn't lean over. Spent a lot of money on that fence. He's done a really good job. The guy who plows it has done a great job. Just piling it high, and then he kind of stopped once the snow got too high. The berm on the road out front on Main Street is, it was this high. And I was taking pictures like this, trying to get it over it. Just, you know, if anybody wanted to see him. So snow, drainage, and just the whole fact that my privacy is going to be lost with people going in and out of that alleyway at night, with my bedroom on that backside, lights. So yeah, those are my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
My name is Colby Ginter. I live south of Chris. My concern is the alleyway is actually my driveway, so that is a concern for me for traffic also, and drainage and snow plowing, and if I'd have to get a fence to block off that alleyway also. Other concerns are pets, dogs, whatever else is going to be running around. We have enough hazards of dogs running around the property right now, so... Other than that, the concern is majorly is the alleyway of my driveway is going to be impacted with traffic. And
can you point to where you live?
So the alleyway here, so this right here is my driveway. I live right here.
So right here?
Yep.
Do you have an easement that allows you access through the alley to the driveway?
Yeah.
A sole easement?
From the alley, if you go back to the last picture there, like the picture looking down the alley is actually... So my house, my garage is 20 foot from Chris's fence here. So the alleyway is, I probably have 30 foot from the alleyway to my garage.
But you don't have a, it is a platted alley.
It's a platted public alley.
It's a public alley.
Mm-hmm.
You use it as your driveway.
Partially, yes. I've been maintaining it since I've been there for a year and a half now, so. I put gravel on it. I matted it with weed barrier and graveled it. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else, please?
My name is Laurel Selby, and I live one block to the east, 21610. One more. And to the south. One more.
Right here.
I bought the house a year and a half ago. A year and 3 months ago, I drilled a new well. No water. When I drilled the well, two of my neighbors went dry. So my concern is, if you drill the well, do six houses, do 12 neighbors go dry? That's my concern. The other concern is the snow storage on the street. And the amount of cars using the corner and the US 40 access into Main Street. Thank you.
Before you...
So you said you drilled a well.
I bought the house with it working well.
Okay.
Silted in. We're very conservative. We were told that it silted in because we didn't use enough water.
Okay.
Drilled a new well. Two neighbors to the northeast went dry.
To the northeast. Can you be more specific?
The top corner. Farther. To the top corner.
Over to the east now?
Yep.
East right now.
Yep. So the white, big white, and the two houses to the south of that. Those two.
Do you
still
have water?
Excuse me.
I drilled a new well. I have water.
And what happened to your neighbors?
They're hauling water from town.
Are they
but
shallow?
You don't know any details about their wells. Shallow, deep, blah, 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 blah.
I've been told that the standard in the neighborhood is between 35 and 65.
Wells on those lots are only 10 years old.
One at a time, please. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, please.
Do you know where I stand? I just wanted to put a human face to this.
I'll try not to get emotional. My name's Emily Jurdy. My family and I live in a tiny house outside of town that we will not disclose. Tiny houses are a way of the future. My generation wants to spend our money in the community and not on our mortgage. We have exorbitant student debt. My husband and I have master's degrees, and our income ratio to what we pay for our home is very different these days. So this project is just one option. It's a way to make home ownership a reality for families like mine. We can have a garden, chickens, a pet. I know that those are concerns from a lot of people here, but that's in any neighborhood, big or small. I can tell you that we use very little water. Our home is very sustainable. Ours is only 325 square feet. And we have two adults, a child, one on the way, a dog, and three cats in it. And why we do that is because we want to show the world that you can live sustainably in luxury. And we also want there to be options for home ownership for people. People tell us to go live in an RV park and a trailer park. I grew up in the Twin Cities. Our hometown has 100,000 people. I'm used to a yard and a place for a garden and a place to have, you know, to call home. So for us, a trailer park and the KOA and everything is not an option for our family. So this is a great option, and it's a great example to other communities in the area of what is possible. So thank you so much for even just considering it, and I hope that you guys can have an open mind of what the future can look like. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good evening. My name is Jason Walshman, and I live with my wife, Kimberly Walshman. And our house is on Main Street, adjacent to the three lots not under discussion, but sold during the purchase.
What's your address?
38925.
So right here.
Okay. 38925. I just wanted to bring up three things. I'm a little nervous here. I feel like they are asking for rezoning because I do feel like I had to purchase two lots to build my home. I do feel like we had to drill the shared well that we paid for that's available for the lots that aren't built on in the 10-foot easement. I also feel that the 10-foot easement around my house plus the 15 for snow removal dictated where my fence was. So I do feel like he's a friend, so this makes it harder.
Okay.
So I do feel like the real question is, A, are we asking to rezone, first of all? Second of all, I think we need to ask ourselves, what's the price point for a single subdivided lot? Because based on income in Yampa Valley, that will dictate to you how many parking spots each lot will need. And it also brings me back to the high density question. Are we changing that? And if so, what precedents are we setting for that for homeowners who've already followed the established zoning regs to build their homes? Like I said, my wife is also a school teacher. So it is possible through diligence to get here. And then, just on notice, they were asking about the white buildings. My wife's lived here long enough in Milner that the restaurant used to be a store, and across the street used to be a library, owned and ran by the same family that just sold those lots. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Next, please.
Rudy Camilletti, longtime area landowners. I would like to mirror the concerns that you've already heard. One other thing I'd like to touch on is, with no more parking than there is, what if any of these people might want to have trailers with motorcycles, boats, snowmobiles, anything like that. Where do they propose that those might be parked? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any other comments? Excuse me.
Good evening. My name is Jacob Custer. I live at 21610 with Laurel Selby. We have some concerns, obviously, about water. We did deal with that well issue last year. So there is a big water concern neighborhood-wide. I think I can speak for everybody here tonight. But another big concern, as well with all the concerns, is the parking. I know that he mentioned 1.33 parking spots per lot. I don't see any one of those units being only lived in by one person with one vehicle. The likelihood of using that bus stop is unlikely, in my opinion. I drive by it daily and very rarely see people getting on or off board, though it is very close to that lot. So my biggest concern is parking and cars. There's not the room to sustain six houses with eight parking spots. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the hearing. Alan, I'm going to lean on you for just a minute, only because I wrote it down and it's fresh in my head.
Okay.
Mr. Camilletti just raised an issue about additional trailers and what have you. Unless I misunderstand, it's often, and it's quite common, that covenants will address those types of issues. For example, they're just not allowed. You can't park anything other than cars on your property. But correct me if I'm wrong. That is one way of addressing it.
That is. The county zoning regulations don't differentiate between vehicles and trailers. So I think that's one of the reasons why two spaces per dwelling unit is required in anticipation of actual vehicles and trailers as well.
Yeah.
I've got a few things that I'd like to...
Well, I was going to say, either you start or I'm going to have the petitioner respond.
Okay. So just to respond to the statement about is the zoning going to change? Yes, the zoning will change. It's currently zoned medium-density residential, and under the current guidelines, there are four lots on this parcel. And under the medium-density residential guidelines, they would be able to build two single-family houses as a use by right, no approval from the county except application for a building permit and meeting all the standards for setbacks, height restrictions, and then building code. Along with that, since they do have the ability to build two houses on there, they have the ability as a use by right to drill a well to serve those two houses. So I do recognize the fact that he's proposing six instead of two, but just wanted to make it clear that he would have that right to. And then as far as snow storage and maintenance of the alley, Michael, does that alley maintenance agreement, does that go into responsibility for plowing and removal of snow and things like that?
It does. There's actually, in fact, what this is, and I don't know if you have that agreement, that it's part of when we bought the land, the title company found it, and I'm like, oh, snap. So your land is I think, parcel D, and then the other ones were A, B, and C, where C is now owned by the other gentleman.
He just left.
Yeah, he has the one with the fence. And so he has one of those. So all four of us are on tap for maintenance of that property, of that alleyway. So this is called a residential road maintenance agreement. It was signed before you and I were in the picture. You know what I mean? And so it's like, but what it does, it talks about encroachment, damage, maintenance, that, you know, on or before January 1st a year, we go through all these kind of specifics. But it in a nutshell, it just says, unless agreed in writing by 100% of the owners, the road committee in advance, the obligations, responsibility, and rights of each owner concerning this should be as follows. And it's just basically that, you know, we have to put it in to access it. And Dave Combs built this, and that's who signed it, is when he owned all those lots with Compenstein. And he built the first house and then or had those lots. And so it just, for me, it's part of this. It's still a public alley. It's owned by the city. But in order for us to, you know, have it, we're in charge of keeping it up. So, you know, when I was hearing about the snow, and I know you guys just pushed the snow that far because it's all you needed. You know, and his fence, you know, it may be packing up against it, but I could see that not having any snow on it, and that snow's pushed all the way back to where it's just a mound of snow like you do in most areas. We can't go all the way to the... It's an alley that's zoned an easement that goes all the way up. So you can see that we're going to stop that road. Parking is right about here for us. So we could push the snow back even further and still be on the easement, not be in somebody's private property. We got 20 foot of space. So, you know, maintenance, we do have to talk about it. I think we're going to make it better than what it is, so your driveways need to be there. And yeah, there is going to be more people that are going to be using that because we have access to it. But we're just going to come in here and park the floor. His fence is, you know, a perpendicular fence that's covered on almost all three sides. But I could see that not being an issue with the proper snow removal. But we plan on plowing it. You know, there's nothing in the covenants that talk about us with the PUD of having to truck snow off. But right now, the right-of-way, when you mentioned the snow on this side, if you see that building is in the right-of-way, we have to take that building down. And so right now you're seeing a lot of snow just packed there because no one's been using it. That's why the snow's up this high. And, you know, we can mitigate the snow based upon square footage of the land, square footage of our parking, and technology with plows and front loaders. You know, I think we can handle it. I think together we'll make it better than what it is. And we'll get a bigger, you know, space. That's my hope, is to make it better than what it is. And it's nice to get some of those codes, because as I was looking in the alleyways of the rest of the community, you know, they all are dirt, gravel roads, and we'll just have to follow whatever the current standard is on that. Thank you.
Christy?
I just had one comment to clarify something that the petitioner had said earlier with respect to public sites. The public site requirement isn't because of the PUD that you're requesting. It's because of the subdivision portion of this application. So as Alan had said, yes, as of right, you can build two homes on those four lots that are there, but the applicant is also subdividing the property and going from two dwellings that they could do as of right and increasing that to six, so an additional four dwellings on that property. So in theory, this will be an impact, an increased impact on public facilities. So that is something to consider and why that requirement is there. But ultimately, that will be up to you to make that recommendation to Board of County Commissioners.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions for either staff or the petitioner?
Then I'd like to maybe turn this into a bit of a round table. And in so doing, I'd ask that we all focus on the four items for discussion, although before the petitioner sits down. Sorry about that.
No, I'm good. I'm here.
I'm a bit confused, but my sense is that in terms of the utility easements and even the setbacks, they're kind of up in the air right now. I mean, we all have in front of us a chart that shows a 15-foot front yard setback. I think it's 8-foot side and a 5-foot rear. Am I thinking right? But I thought I heard you say you really probably have the ability to comply with existing regulations if you needed to.
Yeah, during the staff's deliberate, I mean, when they came through and they put the report, then some of this kind of came up from the different departments that they brought it to our attention that they had a concern about those easements. And as you collect all this different information from the different departments, such as water, and water comes back and says, well, you're only going to get one well. So now all of a sudden that says, well, we don't really need the easement on the south of the property because we're not going to need a water easement at all on that 5-foot easement on the south side because we're not going to have any water down there because additionally it was designed to have two wells going along there. So as we discovered some of these fine-tooth comb kind of issues, we now can massage the plan in the final development part. So if we wanted to make it like a condition of approval that we follow this or how that would work, I just know that we're going to have this whole other step that we're all going to be back here again, and that's when we're really going to say, Mike, these need to be 10-foot or 5-foot, okay. But we'll know right where the water is and the well is because that's part of what the conceptual PUD is about. It's to say, hey, this is kind of what we're thinking about. We kind of want to know, should we go to the next step? The next step is getting the civils and going to the next step of like where we really find it. And it was really the process that allowed all these departments to come forward and say, yeah, you only need one well. That's all you're going to get. And so that changes the scope for us. And that's kind of where I think, in a sense, it's a moving target, but it's kind of part of the whole conceptual PUD, the whole process we're in. So I'm encouraged to gain this knowledge and looking forward to the next step.
Well, and along those lines, I think I also heard that in terms of being in a position to actually meet the open space requirement, I think you were at 150 feet short or something like that.
Yes.
I thought I heard you say that that's available to fix as well.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
Commissioner Pettis, because you were at that end of the table. What's the matter, Andy?
No, I like it. You like it. It's completely arbitrary.
Totally.
I love it.
Comments, what do you think?
I think Mr. Pacino ended on the exact appropriate note. We're not approving a final PUD.
This is a recommendation we are
correct.
In.
At the conceptual phase, I don't think there's any question that this should go forward, and I think that the four items posed for discussion are answered in a way that's favorable for Mr. Pacino. In terms of the master plan, the introduction, section 1.2 DD, says that diverse housing opportunities should be available for all individuals in Brown County. There's an entire chapter within the master plan, chapter 12, that discusses the failing issues or the failing community efforts to provide diverse housing opportunities for individuals within Round County. When I look at the MLS, there are 19 homes in Round County under $250,000. I don't know how much these tiny homes are going to cost, but there's not a lot of options available for people within Round County. So I think the intent of the master plan is satisfied through this conceptual idea here. In terms of parking, I would agree that it's unlikely that this home is going to have multiple vehicles. I think that that's an issue that the applicant should be studying further and come up with a good plan because, as one tiny home owner here indicated, there are at least two drivers in her home presently. So that could be an issue, and one that I think does need to be addressed when it comes time for the final. In terms of the proposed setbacks, same story. The applicant has indicated that there is sufficient space to create space that would satisfy Road and Bridge and the other utility companies. So
I don't think that's an issue, and I think that takes care of issues 3 and 4. But the bottom line is I strongly believe that this should be approved as a conceptual view.
And if I read between the lines, I think summarize your statement, you do have an issue with the parking.
I think that it's an issue the applicant recognizes that that's an issue, or a potential issue, and it's certainly an issue that concerns the neighbors. So when it comes time for the final, I think that that should be something that is addressed again.
Fine. Good.
Do you think that that use is compatible on a site of that size?
I do.
In regards to density?
I do. It is a residential area, and although there will be 6 units, I do believe that the applicant made a strong case that if there were 2 single-family homes with at least 4 adult drivers, husband, wife, potentially kids of driving age, that the impact would be equal to, if not greater, than what's being proposed here.
Mr. Yeager, with all due respect, I know you are a newcomer, but I'm a firm believer in baptism by fire.
So I agree with a lot of what he said. I think that what was addressed that I like that he's going to try and conceptually change some of the utilities. The alleyway was addressed with the snow removal and everything. The HOA, I think, is going to play an important role, especially in the water and the shared utilities that everybody's going to be having. I do have the concern with the parking spots with the snow storage as well. I think that's going to create a very cramped little area, kind of like what I was saying with EMS and different things like that, where there won't be much area for someone, if someone's having an emergency or anything like that, to be able to get in and out without basically directly affecting everybody who's living around there. The other thing is, you know, with the wells, I think that that was addressed as well, that they do have a right to be able to use those and be able to obtain that water. So those arguments, I feel like, can be addressed a little bit later on, but that he has a good system to provide all the water for everybody who is in that area. With this new tank that he's going to be providing. So for me, I do agree with the approval on the conceptual basis as of right now.
Okay.
Chairman?
Yes?
Either can we backtrack to me? Or
absolutely.
Okay.
It's around the table.
One thing that wasn't addressed here but is an issue is the fee in lieu, which I do agree falls under the subdivision regulations. The language in there, unfortunately, is shall, not may. And that language, I think, makes clear that the applicant needs to come up with a plan whereby either the land is dedicated in some way or payment is to be made. I think that that is left to the applicant, but the nature of the language being shall, not may, leads me to suggest that that needs to be addressed.
But I think, not to correct you, Jeff, but I know that in this under 3.5.3, Section A, number 2, cash in lieu of public sites, it does give that, you know, to the board may require the subdivider in lieu to pay the current, the county a fee. So it talks about this dedication of all or portions of the land of public sites. And but it is say the board may require the subdivision. So I mean, I'm not saying we don't want to spend $2,400 or so for that, but it really is open to the board. I mean, to and I'll discuss that with them as well. I don't think it's a deal breaker, to be honest with you. I'm not trying to get out of it. Something that I thought about for the community in that area was maybe we can take something on the corner lot and right here, kind of where, you know, right across the street, is to add another postal box, because there's a post box right here which is insufficient for the community. So there's lacking in post boxes for this whole community. And we could, you know, do something where we can, instead of giving $2,400, make sure we have an additional cluster box something like that.
So you were already thinking outside the box.
Exactly.
We did have this discussion actually in the past, and I don't know that it's come up in housekeeping before, but 3.5.2 says that in addition to the open space requirement, the county shall require the dedication and or payment in lieu.
So you're right. You're right. It does say shall.
The provisions are somewhat conflicting. That said, I do like that creativity, and that's just but one example as to how the applicant might satisfy that requirement.
The fee in lieu has been waived in a couple of recent applications, but those were lot consolidations as a way to encourage consolidation.
Well, the one that I was involved in involved a subdivision of a subdivision. In other words, the developer had already paid a fee in lieu.
That's
and so, at least when I was on board, we agreed to waive it because one payment had already been made.
In addition to, in that case that you're speaking of, the applicant was decreasing density. So they were taking, they could have built on, theoretically, 10 lots, 10 homes, and they were consolidating into 5-acre parcels, building 2 lots. So they were decreasing impact to services.
I always get just a bit confused, so I'm going to just once again display my ignorance and confusion. The petitioner has the ability to meet the open space requirements, mm-hmm. we think. Mm-hmm. He's within 150 or 60 or whatever number is square feet.
Right.
But that's not the issue. The issue is that land probably is supposed to be maintained as open space by covenant and not deeded to anyone else, nor will it have public access. In other words, no sidewalk that goes into it.
It needs to be what's considered usable open space.
And it limits to 5%. So the public sites on 3.5.2, the way I read it, is that it's determined by the board. It says such dedication shall be 5% of the gross land area of the proposed subdivision. So there's the open space section 3.5.1, but the county shall require a dedication of land and or payment in lieu for sites such as schools, fire stations, and other necessary public facilities as determined by the board. So if we build a little mail set for everybody and they have it, that could be sufficient for the
right.
board. It may be under 5%. It could be 1%.
Right.
But the board can decide that, hey, that's a great public benefit, and then it's on the property or something like that.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
Greg, were you done?
Yes.
I think? Okay.
Carl.
All right, we'll talk about the bullet points a little bit. I don't quite know how to address the density thing because it's difficult for me to project what the likely occupancy of these units is going to be. Tiny homes make me claustrophobic, and I just say that, full disclosure, generational thing, it's just hard for me to imagine folks living comfortably, but that's fine, that's not for me. But when I looked at the proposal, I thought, well, the bigger units, you probably have two people in there and one in the others, and we're kind of in the ballpark density-wise as compared to two dwelling units under the existing zoning regulations. Troy talked about the 25-foot. When you start bumping them up, you're adding a lot of livable space to it, and that makes me think maybe the likelihood of seeing a few more people there is a little higher than maybe I initially gave it credit for. Just in terms of the number of human beings in that space, I think we're in the ballpark. But I'm uncertain what the reality of that is going to be. You talk about tiny home research. I don't know if you can shed any light on what typical occupancies are.
Yeah, it's one or two. They're not big. And the whole thing about the height restriction is just...
Sorry. We're trying to get through this.
No, I'm sorry. I asked him a question. That's my bad. The other thing is just the housing shortage being what it is that everybody seems to agree with. There is going to be... a demand for places for people to live. So that kind of pushes things towards the maybe upper end of the density. I think we are pushing the parking requirements, given that, to their kind of absolute limits here. I do have a concern about that. That dovetails into the snow storage. It asks, does the commission think typical parking requirements should apply? Well, they're there for a reason. I haven't really heard a justification for why they should not apply in this case. I thought the point was well made that, you know, what if somebody does have something else that needs a parking spot? That's not available. The setbacks, in reading the packet, and I guess it was really more the easements, I was left with the impression that the companies involved felt like the easements were going to be very tight, and the project may be able to be tweaked to allow more suitable easements. My question about the setbacks really had to do with the larger issue of, you know, is the PUD compatible with other development in the area? And my sense if somebody bought a single-family dwelling and developed that property in accordance with the existing zoning and setback requirements, they also, in my opinion, have a reasonable expectation that neighbors will do the same thing. So, again, I didn't hear a justification for why we should now, just because it's a PUD, start to encroach on kind of what's the standard in the neighborhood. So those would be my comments.
Okay. Andy?
I think that three previous commissioners have done well in summing up the concerns, so I won't dig too much deeper into them. I think you're right on point with all of it. The fee, I say leave it in there as is. It's just it's what we do. Adding, say, a mailbox cluster is thinking outside the box, but now you're removing more snow in an area where you might be storing, meaning store snow. I think you're going to end up having to haul. We have a development that we take care of. I hate snow removal. It is the worst thing in the entire world. I make snow.
It's where we live.
I love making snow. I hate removing it.
But anyway.
I think that you're going to run into a problem with snow storage. I mean, everyone's just using the public alley for snow storage, and that's not really what the alley's intended to do, although with it not ever connecting through. But then you're cutting off access to that last person. Even though they'll never get access off 40, they still have a right to come all the way down. So the snow storage is a big concern. And in general, I think I would support pushing this forward conceptually. I'm not 100% convinced that it falls into the pattern of development that's around it. I agree with Carl on that. I like the idea of thinking outside the box. I live in 1,000 square feet, three people. I understand living pretty small. But the pattern of how the development is occurring, I don't know if it's fair to push this upon Milner. There's some really big parcels in Oak Creek where I think you can make a lot of moves, but that's kind of where I sit right now.
Okey-doke. John?
I'm not so concerned with the density issue. I suspect the one or two that is typical would take care of itself. As far as the second bullet, I mean, it says right up front, the applicant is not required to comply with the parking standards contained in the zoning regulation, even though two sentences further it asks us why shouldn't typical requirements apply. But that being said, I'd like to see the next step have more, somehow, than 8 parking places. I think it should be 10 or 12. As far as the third bullet, I share the concerns of several of the commissioners, plus the neighbors, that snow storage is going to be a very big deal. It's going to require some decisions about the use of the alley. And I think the utility easements that have been discussed to be massaged a bit in the next step will probably not be a problem. So my two biggest issues are a number of parking places and snow storage.
We seem to be developing somewhat of a pattern here. Ryan?
I actually have no concern for parking. I think if it comes to you just have eight parking spaces, you put this on this development, you don't make it the problem of the neighbors. You have eight spaces, no more vehicles are allowed for the residents, period. And it becomes their problem, not the neighborhood problem. And you don't authorize on-street parking, you've got to do snow removal. You just make it condition of the approval. I assume that's allowed in the PUD. The public benefit here, somewhere, there's been a lot of talk about tiny homes, but along the west side, right on the left side of that map, if I'm not mistaken, those are the mobile homes, correct?
Oh, here.
All the way over there, yeah. Far left, maybe? Yeah. They may be the front of the mobile homes, certainly another block further west. Milner already has a series of mobile homes there, which are essentially tiny homes that aren't on foundations and have no imagination. I think somewhere in here, if we as a community are going to do something about affordable housing, we've got to be willing to work with something like this. I go by the KOA several times a week. I'm amazed by the sheer number of people living in there.
Yeah.
They might move out to a place like this, or if it happens in Pittsburgh, maybe there. Good call not going to Hans Peak, by the way. So I like the concept. I don't think we make this development a problem to the neighbors with the parking situation. I agree if you can somehow squeeze out another couple of parking spaces, that'd be great. But other than that, somewhere you've got to start a conversation. If you're serious about affordable housing, this is the start of it. This is it.
Thank you.
Well, I was thinking the same lines as Brian just brought up, the trailer park is sitting right there. And but to move the trailer park right next door to neighbors that already existed and bought into a different set of subdivision rules, and they've all followed those rules. Now we're changing it, subdivided. I think we've been in the master plan pretty well, but I think we are digressing from what my idea of this parcel should be. The intensity is a little bit much for this area. Granted, if it was over there at the trailer park, back and forth, yes. But to just bring this on the neighbors, I think it is the density is a little bit too thick. And I wasn't happy with the setbacks and the utility easements. If something were to happen later down the road and you were to sell, each one of these individual owners is strapped with what do they do and how did they get rid of snow collectively. The parking itself, I was happy with what we've got. If we had what we've looked at in the past, one single family home, I think we had an occupancy of eight people, maybe more than that, would one car per person add up to two houses, what, 16 different people running in and out of a long driveway. Yeah. And with this, maximum of, well, maybe a little bit more, but up to that 12 people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it was Mr. Campbell that brought up the fact that most of these people at the trailer park do come in with a snowmobile trailer or the horse trailer or the utility trailers that park there, that they don't fit into the crawl space. So we're going to have to find some other parking that would work out. Every property in Milner and Steamboat, when we have a secondary house, we will extend secondary units. And there is snow removal problems in every alley in Steamboat. So compare that to Milner. I think you've got a good start with that one. But my last thought that concerned me was what the neighbors brought up. Not only do we need a traffic study, but I think we should really look at a water study as to what is going on with the aquifer underneath Milner and what you're going to do to the neighbors over there. Okay, and the trailer park's pulling off of a really good well, but at the same time, if you were to draw from the neighbors that are right now of what is it going to do. I don't know. I can't make that decision. So with those things, it's really hard for me to support it, but I like to conceptualize again. If we subdivide, we move on and make things smaller. Tiny houses would work. And Milner, it's a good place. Oak Creek's got a good place too. And Stagecoach could work out of the urban growth boundaries there that they're pushing. Those are my comments.
Okay. Roberta?
Well, based on the photography of what the site looks like now, I think any development would be an improvement. So if I was the neighbors, I would be happy to have it cleaned up, particularly the abandoned building that's there. Secondly, I think that from a planning perspective, the design that you came up with, the site plan you came up with, is a good one. It reminds me of the old California bungalows where they had a common area in the middle, and it makes for a pleasant neighborhood feeling. You know, it obviously doesn't comply, I don't think, with the master plan today, but I think it's the idea of the tiny houses is consistent with the goal to provide a diversity of housing in the county, so I think it's a good thing. The parking is a concern to me. If there was a way to get additional parking spaces on there, and maybe you might want to consider impervious surfaces, because you are going to have a drainage issue, so turf block or something like that might make more sense. Another consideration, and this is the California person coming out at me, but in California now they just unbundle the parking from the spaces, so you could actually designate to the two larger units, they get two spaces, and everybody else would get one, and it's how you sign, how you do your land contract, and it's everybody knows going in that it's just an idea. I'm not telling you how to do your business, but it is a suggestion that I'm seeing happen elsewhere in the country. I don't have a problem with the setbacks and the easements, because I understand from your presentation that you're going to deal with that in round two. So water and parking would be my two biggest concerns.
Agreed.
Thank you.
I really want to support this whole concept and project, but I'm not sold at all on the parking and the snow storage. And the most creative thing that I think John was speaking, that came to my head is maybe there's a way to do this in two phases. Because where I'm headed, nobody else has said this, but if this would be a heck of a lot easier for me to support if you had 5 units instead of 6. Because then I have space for parking, and then you have space for snow storage. If after a period of time the whole thing played out and phase two was adding the 6th unit, you come back through the process and say, look, snow plowing works, drainage works, parking works, and we have something to look at based upon the history of the project, and says, we've not received one complaint from the neighbors. Your project is good. It's living up to what we all of our expectations, hope it is. And then at that point in time, I could probably go with the 6 units. Right now, I don't know. I mean, I think the Planning Commission has said that we all want to try to support this. I share all the concerns. I think it was maybe a hydrological study or a letter, because I'm not concerned about a traffic study. I think those streets are way big enough to handle, 6 more units or 5 more units. So Main Street's huge. So I'm not concerned about a traffic study. But I do not want anybody pointing their finger at me saying my wells went dry because we approved 6 units on this. But I get the point that we could go in there with two single-family homes and drill two wells. But that's not what we're here for. That's a use by right. We're here to approve a PUD that you're asking for, and therefore the neighbors have brought up, I think, a valid concern. And over the course of history, I know that some of the wells in Milner's had difficulty. And I don't know, I mean, I don't want you to go out there and spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars with a hydrologist, but I think we would be better informed if we had at least some type of a letter from a Division of Water Resources, I don't know, but somebody that says 90% chance that all the other wells within this proximity are okay, then I feel better about the water issue. I'm very anxious to see your covenants, very anxious to see the HOA. The alley, I think, is a huge problem because of the neighbors. They're already the ones, I guess, that are saddled with maintaining this thing, which we don't have a copy of that document, just so you know. And I think if we'd have got a chance to look at that, maybe we'd have had other questions also. But I do believe, I don't know how many packets we get where Road and Bridge, the first line is that Rock County has the right to close any road at any time for any reason. And it's not only related to your project, but I think just from a safety point of view, I know it's not built now, so that's probably why it's not being used. But I don't want to see cars even bushwhacking across that alley trying to enter Highway 4. So I think the county should go in there and put in a bunch of them concrete blocks and close that alley on the north of your property. I agree with Carl. You know, the humans on site, I think, fit numbers to numbers. But I got to see something that tells me we got enough room for parking and snow storage. Because I also agree with Mr. Kemlady's comment, maybe. I got to believe that there's going to be trailers and snowmobiles and motorcycles and whatever. And somehow we got to account for that. Maybe you can get it done in your covenants. I don't know.
I think Silver Spur does.
That's another reason. The covenants are only going to be enforced by your HOA. Ergo, I hope it's very strong in that, because they're the ones that are going to have to enforce it. And the neighbors are going to be the ones that have to put up with it. So it's an issue. I think you can address it. Yeah. Mike, you've done a great job. I love the site plan. I would personally be happy with shortening up that open space. But you said that's not even negotiable, right, Alan?
It's a requirement of the PUD section.
Any other bullet points? I think we've lost sight, too, of the other homes on the east side of that alley. They can also use it. So it's not just the neighbors on the west side of the alley.
I was a little weird on that, why it doesn't write in there that they even have maintenance.
Yeah, so potentially we have at least five other users, excuse me, a total of five users that have the right to use that alley. And we've got to come up with a plan. And maybe that document you've got answers those questions, but we haven't seen it. So snow storage, alley, drainage is huge. It's a flat site.
Yeah.
There's going to be water running all over that. And I don't know that your problem to fix all the drainage in Denver through those bar ditches and whatever culverts there are. But you need to come up with a drainage plan that says, this is what I'll do to take care of my project, I guess. Thank you.
So, Alan, from a procedural standpoint, as it stands right now, do you have enough comments that have been generated by the commissioners, or do you want them itemized in the form of a list?
I'm
keeping track, too, but
mainly parking, snow storage, maintenance of the alley. Those are the big three that I heard. Are there any other ones?
Well, I think the impact on wells, unless
wells. Yeah,
well, the impact on wells, but the state issues that and gives us the answer on that. How much further do we
I've never seen the state say, oh my God, the wells went dry. You don't get your well anymore?
No.
That doesn't happen. So all I'm asking was is that he present us with some sort of professional opinion regarding wells surrounding you. There's a radius that thing draws down.
Cone of depression.
The ground, it goes down. And the concern that they run up on the east there, if that cone of depression is going to dry up two or three wells, I'd like to know that.
Or would this also satisfy your concerns, maybe yours and Roberta's as well, if more information were available that detailed exactly what happened on the two wells that did dry up?
Possibility.
I mean, for all I know, the wells were pit wells and they were 10 feet deep, and
fair enough.
What happened. I don't know.
You can bring all that information to the table. But I think the subdivision regs require the developer to provide water, adequate source of water.
And
so apparently, he'll get adequate water. So what we're doing, or what I'm doing, is asking for a study that tells me that that cone of depression won't dry up five neighboring wells.
So that would go above the regulations, above the subdivision regulations, because we just require proof of a well drilled within 500 feet of the property line, which this most certainly does.
Mr. Chair, the four issues which are being discussed are addressed in the proposed general conditions of the approval of this conceptual PUD related to easements, that's under 4A1, related to water, that's under 4A4, related to alley development, which includes the concerns of road and bridge vis-a-vis snow storage, that is under 4G, and related to parking, that's under 4H1. So for any final PUD to be approved, these issues that we're discussing right now need to be addressed by the applicant.
I think you're dead on, and I guess where I was coming from, Jeff, because this is really going to take the form of a recommendation. My thoughts were that with special emphasis on the above four or five items that we've been beating up here, when we make our recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners, say, look, these are the hot buttons, and these are the things that give us an ulcer. And again, the way I'd like to do this, I'll ask for a recommendation up or down from each of you, but it would be with a thought that if we go forward on a recommendation, there's a message being sent to the county commissioners and, frankly, the petitioner and staff that we have ulcers over parking, snow storage, water, and the alley.
But I do have one opinion to change of mine, which was I did have a concern about parking, but Roberta brought up the
unbundled
usage of the parking.
Designated kennel.
I owned a unit at the residence of Old Town, one parking unit per condo. The bigger units did get two spots. The HOA specifically detailed issues related to the hauling of snow. It specifically prohibited the storage of trailers. I think with careful drafting, as Commissioner Brookshire pointed out, these issues can be resolved. But I also think the minutes, given the discussion, will reflect and illustrate to the commissioners our concerns.
That's the project I was referring
to, that we
haul snow off of, because it was designed with inadequate storage, and nobody thought of it. Maybe somebody thought of it, but now it's a huge deal. I mean, we haul constantly off of that site. I'm sure you see the bill.
I did, and it was pleasant to listen to it.
Yeah, we start early.
Yeah,
and that's one of the most challenging sites on snow removal, in my opinion. So
yeah.
That's one of the things that is being discussed. It's just something like that where we're pushing the limit a little bit and not providing it, you're setting up a situation for hauling.
Maybe, but there's a...
Which is precedent. A solution.
Yeah.
But that goes against trying to be green. Now you're using diesel to haul snow off.
So I'd like to call up a question.
Yes.
I'd move for the approval of activity number PL19-101 with findings of fact number one and conditions 1 through 8 as written, with the direction or recommendation to the county commissioners to study bullet points 4A1, 4A4, 4G, and 4A1.
Could you repeat this? 4A1.
4A1, 4A4, 4G, and 4H1.
4H1.
Halo 1.
Got it.
Second.
Discussion on the motion.
Was that Brian?
I'm sorry, Brian.
Brian, was that you? Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion on the motion.
That's a recommendation for approval of the conceptual PUD and sketch of subdivision.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, what are you looking for under 4A? Or 4A4?
4A4, I think, is a direction to the applicant for the final PUD that the applicant submit plans for the water supply. In other words...
Meaning the pipes to the units?
Well, and that if there is not adequate well supply, that the PUD would be granted.
I think he's viewing water supply as the well.
Correct.
And cistern.
Okay.
And pipe.
And I guess I'm all tangled up here because they go out there and drill a well, 100 feet deep, he gets plenty of water. But I don't know what it does to the neighbors. Is that included in 4A? 4A4?
Mm-hmm. As Alan pointed out, I don't think that's required by the subdivision regulations.
Yeah, we can require it.
But that's not what I'm asking to be required, but if the applicant wants to be a good neighbor, I think it might be a good thing to do. The applicant, I think, would run the risk, given the discussion tonight, of drilling an insufficient well that endangered his neighbors.
That does not make any sense to dig a well that's going to run anybody's well dry.
That's
ridiculous to consider. We would hopefully not, I mean, that would not be...
So, is it different than a single dwelling unit drilling a hole and having the same result?
No.
Single family neighborhood isn't approved by the county. It's already according to zoning. So, in other words, that is a use by right,
mm-hmm.
in my view.
Would you consider an amendment to your...
Well, since the motion has been seconded, it's the board's motion.
Gotcha.
So it does not require Jeff's direct.
Yeah.
So any more discussion on the motion that has been made and seconded?
No more discussion?
Okay. All those in favor of Commissioner Pettis' motion as presented, please signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Against, please say no.
No.
One no, chair votes yes. Motion carried. You've got a recommendation for the next step from us.
You guys, thanks for your time. Seriously, thank you.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Mr. Chairman,
I don't know. I never heard of it.
Would you like to know why I voted no?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Sarah.
So why I voted no, I don't believe that the PUD as proposed with six dwelling units is compatible with the other developments in the area.
Excuse me.
We're still having a meeting here. Could you take it outside, please? Thank you.
I think with the six units, we're putting an undue amount of strain on parking, snow storage, reliance on the alley, all of those things. I just think fixes too many.
Good for you, Carl.
Hi, Nick.
So,
sure, absolutely.
Why not?
My name is Kim Walshman. I am a longtime resident of the Milner area and of Brown County. I teach first grade at Soda Creek. One of my concerns is my husband and I put everything we have into our home, which followed the guidelines. And I did hear some of the commissioners talk about changing those guidelines when the rest of us thought we had to have 2 months to build the house. So I'd also like you to keep that in mind as you move forward.
Okay.
And that's a big concern for a lot of our neighbors that I didn't hear, and this makes me nervous to talk in front of people. Give me 6-year-olds, I'm great. Adults, not so comfortable. And one of my other concerns that my husband didn't bring up was is they also purchased the lot between our house, that other vacant lot. So if we pass here, how does that affect me, who I have a shared water contract with that lot as well? And if we move to 6 dwellings there, how is that going to affect my shared water if they move forward and want to build there as well? But I think all of those residents out in this area bought and built knowing that you had to have 2 lots to. I'm for the tiny homes. I'm a HDTV addict. Tiny home. I'm just concerned what it will do to my property values.
Good.
Ma'am.
Thank you.
Ma'am.
Thank you.
Are you aware that on March 12th at 1:30, maybe a school day?
Yes, I have it in my calendar.
Okay, that's the Board of County Commissioners.
Yes, I did.
And I would encourage you to speak at that meeting.
Thank you. I appreciate you letting me talk.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
So, Alan, was I interpreting your comment that once a motion is made and seconded, there can be no amendments to that motion?
No, it's, Steve asked Jeff, are you okay with that amendment? Once it's seconded, it's the board's motion. So if you would like to make an amendment to that motion, you would make the amendment, it would get seconded by somebody, and then the entire board would vote on that motion.
So it's just a friendly amendment.
There's no such thing as a friendly amendment under Robert's Rules of Order.
Oh.
It's just an amendment. And it can be hostile or whatever. It's just an amendment.
There you go.
The extent I thought an amendment would have been embellishing or referencing the conversation on the wells.
That's hard to. We're going to see this again.
Yeah. Anyway, administrative. Oh.
No, I don't mind.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. We need a member. Alan, you want to talk to us about that?
The Area Plan Coordinating Committee is rather unique in local government, having membership of Steamboat City, Steamboat Planning, Rock County Commissioners, Rock County Planning.
It was a minor.
Paul and Bear is no longer a planning commissioner, and he, along with me, were the two planning commissioners that go to this APCC meetings, which are generally quarterly. So we need a volunteer to be the second member, and ideally that volunteer could attend the next meeting Wednesday, May 8th.
Do you have preferences as to where this volunteer lives? And what
not
I mean by living is
none at all.
Steamboat versus.
This is a valley. There's really nothing else like this. It's the whole valley. So it can be any commissioner from any location.
They typically meet at 10 o'clock the second Wednesday. Kathy Myers, the current president, runs a very efficient meeting, always less than an hour.
I have a lot of flexibility. I have some personal stuff going on that's a little bit of a bummer, but it shouldn't affect that. I could participate.
Can you come Wednesday, May 8th?
As far as I know.
Okay.
Barring any unforeseen type of thing.
Goes without saying, I think.
You won't be making sense.
I think you will fill a wonderful role.
Oh, yeah? Truly. I don't know if you're being facetious.
Go, Andy, go. So you have your volunteer. Andy has stepped up to the plate. Thank you, Andy.
I'd be happy. In my 10 years on this body, I haven't really done anything outside of it, so I'll be happy to help.
This is not burdens.
I'll send you all the documents, Andy.
Hey, thanks.
You'll thank me later.
I will.
And thank you, John, for continuing to serve. You were saying? They're done.
That's done.
Christy, are you doing an administrator's report?
Yep. So the next scheduled meeting is March 7th, and we have our joint meeting with the Board of County Commissioners. On that agenda, we will be also having our general housekeeping amendment discussion. Jeff, you brought that up before. So I wrote down a note to talk to Chad about that section. We put that on the list to see at the work session if there should be amendments to section 3.5.2.
This is the May versus shall on the fee and lieu?
Yes.
No, fee and lieu is on. We will discuss fee and lieu at that hearing.
What?
Yeah.
Did you just put that on? Okay. Well, anyway, that will be one of the discussion items. As well as we're going to be discussing an overview of some of the amendments that have happened this past year. Secondary home units, just to bring everybody up to speed, the new members and new Board of County Commissioner, as well as a discussion on an update, possible update to the master plan. So that is scheduled for May 7th. Thereafter, March 7th. The next scheduled meeting after that is March 21st, and we have an application scheduled for outdoor storage under section 5.15, and that is the zipline application that you previously heard. So there'll be
the zip line
property. Thereafter, we don't have anything scheduled at this point in time. We do have several applications that have just been submitted or are soon to be submitted, so I anticipate it being a busy spring. So follow up on former applications that you saw. The Ron Wendler application went before Board of County Commissioners. As you recall, you all saw that application.
This was the abandonment of
the vacation of the road up in Towns Peak. Your recommendation for denial was followed by, or supported, I should say, by Board of County Commissioners. And that application was denied. And I think that's the only follow-up report I have from items that I've seen. Any other questions?
Chair? I'm going to dismiss.
Adjourn.
All right.
Done.
Too early.
She's not a good one, right?
My dog is good.
Good to know.
Yeah.